puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Yes, back in Manitoba, where we are about to take the road less traveled when it comes to Manitoba history with our history expert and, well, maybe a tad obsessive based on what he said last week, Gordon Goldsboro. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Lori.
So I do remember your clue yesterday, or not yesterday, but last week when you were talking to Nadia, saying it was about a find that your wife actually made, that she's lived to rue the day.
That's right. And you mentioned the road less traveled. Well, roads factor fairly prominently in today's story.
Okay.
Okay, let's start the story back about 20 years ago. It was the late 1990s. My wife and my family had moved here to Winnipeg. We had built a home on what was, I guess, initially sort of low-lying property, and we thought we needed to raise it up. Put a sign out on the boulevard and said, clean fill wanted.
Clean fill.
What we discovered is that the word clean means different things to different people.
Yes, I know that. And, personal experience myself, yes.
As a result, we were getting all kinds of things dropped off, and what we discovered is that we would have to probe through these piles of soil to make sure there wasn't a lot of chunks of concrete and other things. So one day my wife was out shoveling, probing the load that had just been delivered, and she hit sort of a metallic thing, sort of clunk. So she dug it down thinking, oh, here's another piece of scrap metal that was delivered. And what she discovered was a little flat piece of metal about 4.5 inches wide, about 10 inches long. And it was all caked with mud, but she could see in one corner the number 4. And that kind of intrigued her. What was this thing? So she took it inside, cleaned the mud off it, and it said 614. And then to the one side, it had a little sort of shield with a bison on it, below which it said M-A-N, and below that it said 1912. What was this thing? So she did a little research and found out, lo and behold, it's a license plate from Manitoba from the year 1912.
Well, just a minute, because I was about to say, what is this piece of old metal that you've brought to the studio?
Well, today it's show and tell day. So
I'm holding it in my hand, and yes, I see the bison and that little shield-looking thing, Manitoba 614. Yes,
that's right.
You've cleaned it up very nicely, Gordon.
Yeah, well, it's kind of battered. It's kind of rusty. It's not in great shape, but nevertheless, it's like it's over 100 years old, and this sort of fascinated her, and so she showed it to me, and I think that's where our story really kicks into gear. The history of license plates goes back to the very, very first car.
And that, the what?
Well, automobiles in Manitoba, of course, we've had them for over 100 years. The first car, in fact, was in 1899. A fellow named Edgar Kenrick brought it here. In the early 20th century, it really exploded. I mean, a lot of cars were on the road. It was the latest sort of rich man's toy. Mm-hmm. Everyone who was anyone would get rid of their horse and wagon and replace it with a car. So by the early part of the 20th century, by 1908, the government decided they really needed to regulate this. They needed to have licenses on these cars. So they initially told the owners you had to put a number of some kind on your car and you decide how to do that. But by 1911, it was clear they had to take a hand. So they started issuing government license plates. And the first one in 1911 was a nice sort of eggshell blue color with white letters on it. And this following year was black license plate with white letters, and that's the one that we have here today.
So this is what year?
1912.
Okay, 614, black with white letters.
It's the second year that they issued license plates in Manitoba. Hmm. Well, so of course, she showed it to me, and my first thought was, well, I wonder who owned this car that this license plate was attached to.
Of course you wondered that.
Of course I would. So I thought, well, the place to go and find out will be the provincial archives, because they have all the records relating to the provincial government, and since it was the government who issued the license plates, that would be the logical place to find out. So I went there and I said, I've got this license plate and I'd like to know who it belonged to. And they said, well, I'm sorry, but all of the records for license plate registration were destroyed in a fire back in the 1950s.
Oh, it's over. Back goes Gordon and takes up needlepoint.
Well, not quite. It was sort of a dead end, though, for me. At least I thought it was for a while. So I kind of put that to one side. I thought, well, maybe someday I'll learn something about it. Well, then I was at the Provincial Archives again several months later. I was looking for information about the early hunting at Delta Marsh. I was working on a book about Delta Marsh, and one of the first fellows who used to hunt out there was a guy named Edward Drury. He was a fairly wealthy Winnipegger. He owned a brewery here in Winnipeg, the Drury Brewery.
The Drury Brewery. It's like you've been drinking already.
And, of course, because he made quite a lot of money doing that, he had the means to do things like own an automobile. But he was also an inveterate collector. And over the years, he would create scrapbooks, and not just your average sort of small scrapbook. His were, I think they were a couple of feet across. They were big, big books. And over the course of his life, he had a couple of dozen of these scrapbooks. When he died, they ended up at the provincial archives. And so because I was interested in knowing his involvement at Delta Marsh, one of the archivists said, well, have you looked at the Drury scrapbooks? And so, no, I hadn't. So I was flipping through them, and man, they're great. I mean, they're eclectic as heck. And one of the things in them was Mr. Drury's first pair of pants.
In a scrapbook?
In a scrapbook. He had his first pair of pants.
Nice.
And so I flipping, and there was this one page with a little booklet on it, and looked at it, and it said on the front cover that it was a directory of automobile owners for 1912.
No, it was fate, Gordon.
Well, see, what it was is that there was a publication here in Winnipeg called Gas Power Age. Basically, it was sort of an enthusiast's magazine for car owners. And the idea was that people who liked cars would want to know who else had a car. They could sort of get together and talk cars and things. So that was the premise of this little booklet, was to enable people who were interested in cars to find out more. Well, there it was in this booklet. It gave for each license plate number, it gave the name of the owner, it gave their address, and it gave what kind of car they had.
Was number 614 in there?
Indeed it was. So I scanned down, and number 614 was assigned to a guy named Alicia Hutchings. And I thought, man, that name sounds familiar. So I did a little more research, and it turns out he was actually quite a famous guy in his own right. He had come to Winnipeg in the early days and formed a saddlery company that sold saddles and other leather goods. And he did very well at it, because by the early 20th century, by 1910, there was a listing of Winnipeg's 19 millionaires, and he was one of them.
Wow. Saddles and all. And they throw them all aside for a car.
Well, that's right. Because, of course, that was the trend, eh? Away from the horse-drawn horsepower, right, to gasoline horsepower. So I now knew a little bit more about that one license plate, but I thought, hey, wouldn't it be neat to know a little more about these various car owners?
Who wouldn't want to know more?
So I began to do research on all the other people on this list
I'm not surprised to hear that, Gordon.
So I ended up with a very large spreadsheet. I cross-referenced it with the 1911 Canadian census, finding as many of these people in the census as I could. Mm-hmm. And it had details like their age, their ethnicity, their religion, their occupation. You know, write a detailed directory. So, for example, I can now tell you that the age of the average automobile owner in 1912 was 42 and a half years old.
I have been panting to know that. Thank you.
Well, and I learned other things, like that 82% of them were married. The vast majority, well over 95%, were male.
I'm not surprised to hear that, actually.
but it also was interesting in other ways, too. I mean, I learned about the various models of cars that they had. So about 20% of them were Fords. Well, not surprising. Henry Ford was one of the early pioneers in automobiling. And there was a lot of other, you know, names that people might recognize today, like Cadillac, Oldsmobile, Packard, Studebaker. But there were a few unusual ones. In fact, some of the more common ones that at that time that we would not recognize today were things like EMF, Hupp, Mitchell, Reed. There was even a car registered that was described as a vacuum cleaner.
What? Really?
I have no idea.
Did it really suck or what?
It must have. And there was even electric cars. We think today that electric is really sort of trendy. Well, no, they had at least 9 manufacturers making electric cars back then, and they were actually marketed to lady drivers.
Yeah. And did you enter all this in your spreadsheet, I hope?
I absolutely did, yes.
Good work.
So, of course, through the years, I've had all kinds of uses that I've been able to put this database to. One of them is if you have any old photographs of Manitoba scenes that show an automobile, and if you can see the license plate clearly enough that you can read the number on it, sometimes I can even tell you, you know, a little bit more about that. So, for example, a friend of mine had a postcard from here in Winnipeg, and it showed a portion of Hargrave Street next to an apartment block, and you can see a car parked in front of the apartment block with license plate number 112. So I looked it up, and it turns out it's a fellow named John Coulter, who was a prominent doctor here in Winnipeg. And so I looked him up, figured out where he lived, where he worked, and it wasn't anywhere near where this postcard was. So I'm thinking, who knows, maybe the doctor was making a house call. They used to do it in those days.
That's true.
So there was an application of this database. But another one was, I thought it would be interesting to know, in the collections today, license plates are a very sought-after collector's item. How many of the 1912s have survived? And so I put out the call to people saying, if you have a 1912, let me know and I'll tell you a little more about it. And so I actually have heard from now 149 collectors all over the world who have 1912 license plates from Manitoba. And so they gave me the number. I would tell them a little more about the car, the owner, and so on. What is interesting, I think, is that if you look at the demographics of those surviving license plates, about 56% of the plates in 1912 were issued to Winnipeggers, but a little over half of the license plates to Winnipeggers. Not surprisingly, it was
Most people live in the city.
In 1912, only about 30% of the population of Manitoba was in Winnipeg, but 56%. So what it says, the disproportionately large number of cars in Winnipeg, is it was the center of industry, the center of government. But what's interesting is that over half of the plates were issued to Winnipeggers, but only about one quarter of the surviving license plates were for Winnipeggers. What it means essentially is it's far more likely for a rural license plate to have survived to today than for an urban one. And I think there's a very good reason for that. That in the city, there was very active recycling. In fact, they would often take old metal like this and dump it in holes when they needed to fill a hole. Even today, when they're pulling up old sidewalks or old streets, there's collectors that want to get in there to see what sort of treasures there might be hidden underneath because they've used old bits of metal to fill the holes. And out in rural areas, they didn't have those sort of recycling programs. So instead, I know for a fact that my family, for example, used old license plates as patches on their granaries.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Out in the country, you still see them
filling up holes in the walls. That's right. Very practical. You know, why throw away a perfectly good piece of metal when you can put it to some use?
Yes.
So that's why I think the rural plates have survived much more so than the urban ones. So there's an interesting aspect.
Well, what I want to know is, how has your wife survived?
Well, she has said on numerous occasions since that early discovery that if she had known then what she knows today, she would have taken that plate, would not have shown it to me. She would have pitched it into the woods.
History widow.
Yes, indeed. And there's a new dimension to the story. I was giving a presentation a couple of weeks ago, and at the end of it, a woman came up to me and said, I've got a present I'd like to give you. And she reached into her bag and pulled out a 1914 license plate. And she said she had been out walking along the riverbank here in Winnipeg and had found it protruding out of the bank. So I looked at it and it went, oh, really? That's in beautiful shape. Number 5800. And I thought, oh, that's not in my database. It's beyond the range that's in my... So now I need to know who owned this license plate. So the story begins again.
did she even know that had number 614?
No. She didn't know any of that. So I was able to tell her the obsession that I've had for almost 20 years.
Oh, there's a lot of fate involved in this particular story, including the fate of your wife's weekends without you.
That's right.
Well, do you have a clue for next week?
Yeah. Well, next week we're going to discuss the abandoned home of a noted Arctic explorer who in 1879 was one of the founders of the Manitoba Historical Society.
That will be very interesting. And thank you so much for coming in and good luck with the spreadsheet.
Thanks very much, Lori.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.